This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha.
I would say use the tools that you have at your disposal. If you have a smartphone, you have everything you need. Literally, the first film that I created, meaning I wrote, directed, and produced it, was shot on an iPhone 8 Plus.
Okay.
And that is all I needed.
Film is a medium that takes you places. Sometimes that's far away, others it's near. So near, you feel it in your heart and see it around you. St. Louis native Cherie Silerio has direct experience with each of those. There's a poignant example of that in The Last Repair Shop, a short documentary Cherie worked on as production coordinator and that won an Oscar just this spring.
I think a lot of people see a broken thing and they just think it's broken. Could be anything. Maybe it's public schools.
Or maybe it's the United States or any other part of the world.
Maybe it's just that $20 fiddle found out of swap meet.
But when we see a broken thing, we think, oh, with a little something here, a little something there, we can fix the part that's broken and make things whole again.
It's difficult work.
But no matter what,
you do whatever it takes because
it is one of the best things that humans do.
That's why this is not just a musical instrument repair shop. When an instrument breaks, there's a student without an instrument. No, not in our city.
Now, the city you're hearing about is Los Angeles, which is where Cherie moved to pursue a career in film as a writer, producer, and director of her own work. And Cherie is now joining us in studio to talk about being part of an Academy Award-winning team and going places to create films that take viewers places they might not know they need to go. Cherie, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
So the Last Repair Shop, we just heard a clip from it in the introduction. How is it that you would describe the central message of The Last Repair Shop?
For me, the central message of the film is there are all things or all people have something that needs to be healed, and that music or creative expression is an outlet for people to do so.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a film that features several instrument repair technicians at a shop that's part of the Los Angeles Unified School District. And it spotlights a range of students, too. And among them is 12-year-old violinist Porsche Brinker. And she's the first LAUSD student we meet. And what Porsche says, it really gets, I think, to that message.
I love the violin. The hardest things in my life is probably my family's health. Like, everybody's always getting sick back to back. They're like, oh, we have to go to the hospital for them and stuff. Like, wait, I'll hear you play in a minute. I just have to get these medicine for them. You know, I can understand, but it's like, okay. Like, I guess I'll play by myself. If I didn't have my violin from school, I don't know what I would do. Don't even jinx me with that.
So she says, don't even jinx me. It's so very typical of a child that age. I'm certainly having a reaction listening to that audio. What is it that made you want to work on The Last Repair Shop?
Yeah, so I was proud to be a part of this film because it brings to life the very real challenges that people deal with from day to day, not just, you know, adults, but also children. I think we forget that, you know, children play and they have fun, but there are also very real things that they are going through and experiencing and growing up. And, you know, being able to work on a film where children have a safe space to express that and to be honest about what it's like to be them, what are some of the things that help them to, you know, grow and feel good about themselves and feel like they're, you know, giving something back to the world was a thing that just made me so proud to be a part of the film. But also, you know, people's difficult journeys and what are some of the things that have helped them to get to the other side or to keep going or to maintain hope.
Mm-hmm. And you got involved with this project after it got its start, right? Mm-hmm. What was it that made you decide this was something that you wanted to work on?
Yeah, so I started at Breakwater Studios in 2022. So the film was shot and started to be made in like 2019. So the first interaction that I had with the film was in the post-production process. So I would sit in with the editor, the amazing Nick Garnham-Wright, to share, you know, thoughts and notes on how things should be structured and, you know, whose story should be told first, how do we transition from this to that. And from the moment I sat down and watched the first, you know, clip of that, I was like, oh my goodness, there's so much heart here, there's so much love, there's so much vulnerability, and that, you know, made me excited to be a part of the process from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. And the actual part that I was able to be a coordinator in, you know, meaning like helping with the shoot, was the end credit scene. And so that was a grand scene with the, you know, the orchestra, everyone, you know, playing their instruments, and you know, the experience was surreal. I literally, you know, just get chills thinking about it because it was just an absolutely beautiful experience from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm. And that beautiful experience was recognized by the Academy. And so how did it feel to learn that this film that you'd worked on had won an Oscar?
I was absolutely overjoyed. Not just because, you know, this is a thing that filmmakers and people in the entertainment industry work their whole lives for, but just that the story and the people within it were honored, and that, you know, we put all of our hearts and souls into creating an absolutely beautiful film, from how it looks to how the stories are told and the, you know, footage that's in there that supplements the film. Absolutely overjoyed, ecstatic. You know, proud, excited. Yeah, that's how I would describe how it mm-hmm. felt.
And it came like relatively early on in your time in Los Angeles, right?
Yes.
I mean, how did that feel?
Under 2 years. I mean, it will be 2 years since I moved to LA this August, mm-hmm. which is absolutely wild to me.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing when I'm supposed to be doing it. Like, you know, the timing is right. Everything aligned perfectly. So it just, you know, lets me know that it can be done, that you can create work that you care about and that makes a difference on people and impacts people, but also, you know, is recognized by the film world as something that's worthy of being honored.
Yeah. So I think I've heard it said that luck is a combination of timing and preparation.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the work that you had already done, how did The Last Repair Shop align with the filmmaking that you had accomplished already before moving to Los Angeles?
Yes, it aligns because for the most part, things that I gravitate towards, projects that I gravitate towards, are about people who've had some of the most troubling or difficult or tragic circumstances in their life, but they found a way either through, you know, writing or, you know, being an artist or some way to get over the other side while also positively impacting other people throughout the process. So at the core of anything I do is really honoring people's truths and creating a safe space for them to be very vulnerable and honest about what is it like to be them,
mm-hmm.
you know, what is it like to be human. And so that's why I really connect to The Last Repair Shop. I mean, I can go little bit by bit for, you know, each person who's in the film and connect with them in some type of way as far as my personal journey. Yeah.
Yeah. And as far as the specific things that you have made, what are some of the documentary series or short films that you've done that really show that parallel between what people will experience with The Last Repair Shop and the work that you've already done?
Yeah, so I wrote, produced, and directed a short documentary called Black Girl Blue. And in that film, different Black women, all from St. Louis, Missouri, talk about how their mental health challenges have been impacted by the strong black woman, you know, stereotype. Mm-hmm. And they share some very difficult moments in their lives, but also how they've been able to overcome those moments. And therapists also share some insights into the particular mental health challenges that black women face, but also, you know, what are some tools and ways of caring for yourself. So it aligns with The Last Repair Shop in that it's very vulnerable, it's very raw, but it also offers hope. It offers inspiration for, you know, keeping on going. And it's just a very heartfelt and personal piece.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with St. Louis native Cherie Solerio, a filmmaker who is part of the Oscar-winning team of the documentary short, The Last Repair Shop. Cherie, how is it that you came into filmmaking to begin with?
I would have to go back to probably middle school through elementary school. I grew up in a neighborhood where there weren't too many people who looked like me. Mm-hmm. So I often felt, I describe it as an other or out of place. You know, people or classmates will make comments to me like, you're ugly because you're black. Or I had a classmate like sniff me one time and was like, oh, you smell good. I thought black people stink. So I was constantly aware of how I was being perceived, which, you know, led to a little bit of anxiety, understandably. Mm-hmm. And so I needed an outlet, a place to feel safe. And that was often, you know, writing in my journal, reading fictional books. But when my parents purchased a camcorder to record my younger brother's football games, I would take that camcorder, mm-hmm, when everyone would leave the house, and I would record myself dancing, singing, reciting monologues, and that just became my safe space where I could just be myself 100% without, you know, being concerned about how I was being perceived or what people were thinking about me. And then another outlet was also, like, you know, watching films and television shows, music videos from literally sunset to sunrise. And that's just where I felt comfortable. And so after that, I learned about merging my love of film and writing at undergrad in St. Louis University. Mm-hmm. And I took a screenplay class. And from there, I was like, okay, this is something that I absolutely have to do because this is all of me poured into this one medium. And so that's when I decided that this is something I wanted to keep going.
Mm-hmm. So it really did start at home.
Yes.
And here in St. Louis, yes, at St. Louis University. Mm-hmm. You know, St. Louis has been building its profile as a place that welcomes and supports filmmaking. At the same time, you know, it struggles to raise up and retain homegrown talent, particularly in its film and video production industry. And you're a little bit of an example of that, perhaps. And is that why, you know, you felt that you needed to leave for another place, and specifically for Los Angeles?
For me, I think it's a mix of things. So my parents tell me that when I was a little girl, I would always talk to them about California, and, you know, that's the place where I wanted to be. Like, I remember checking out a book from the library about California. I may or may not still have that book.
Okay.
But that I was just always felt drawn to it. I don't know if it was a name, knowing there were palm trees, but I've always been drawn to the place, and it's always felt like somewhere that I needed to be. So I guess I was kind of called there. But then, I mean, I worked in the film industry in St. Louis, like, as a production assistant, and I had many friends who were also in the industry. They would often have to go to other cities and states to find work. Mm-hmm. And that was at the time where we didn't have, you know, the film tax incentive. So they're finding projects here and being able to work consistently was very difficult. And so part of the reason I was like, okay, I want to be able to do this all the time, 365 days a year if I can. Where do I need to go to do that?
Right.
What place has a beach nearby, has nice weather, palm trees, and of course, California, LA makes absolute sense. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we talked on the show about diversity in media, and particularly video and film production, and that diversity in media is an ongoing challenge in St. Louis. While Black people are the largest non-white population here, less than 2% of staff at local commercial video production houses are Black. And it's not for lack of interest among Black St. Louisans, but there is inequitable access to adequate training. And then there's also gatekeeping around on-set opportunities. When I was looking through the list of jobs you've done, you have done a lot. Mm-hmm. Is that lack of access part of the reason you had to sort of become a, you know, like a Jack or Jill of all trades?
I would say 100% yes. If there aren't opportunities available in one area, then I have to pivot because, I mean, either I'm working or I'm not. And so it's also partly because I was interested in those things. Honestly, for a while, I was kind of, it was difficult to put roots here and a foundation to really do all the things I wanted to do in film. So I was like, okay, what other creative opportunities are there available that I can, you know, tap into? And, you know, communications, public relations were some of those things. But yes, a huge issue is not having access to those opportunities. And I think a big part of that is people are used to working with who they work with, and mm-hmm. they know that those people, you know, have the skills or whatever, and they might be apprehensive of, you know, giving someone else an opportunity, or, you know, seeing if someone else can do it, or training someone else up. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I was very thankful for the Continuity STL program, because that program, which is focused on diversifying people in media, was like, okay, you all can do this. Let's give you the tools to do it. And but yes, it's definitely access to the tools, so like camera equipment, audio, all of that, as well as the training and the just the openness to say, okay, you have the ability, let's cultivate it.
Mm-hmm. Something that we've talked about also on this show is about being from St. Louis, and that St. Louis you can't spell hustle without STL. So you're nodding. Do you think that being from St. Louis, from the Midwest, this particular part of the Midwest, has helped you in LA, of all places?
I would say yes, 100%.
Yeah,
it
in
sure
what
has.
Ways? Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're in the Show Me State, so if you want someone to believe something, you have to become it, you have to make it happen, you have to bring it to life. And that is what has always been my experience of, like, my parents. Like, they're both hard workers. They've always made sure they had a job, if not two, you know, that my siblings and I were taken care of, and just did whatever they had to, you know, make sure that everything was how it needed to be. And so, I don't know, that there's in St. Louis, there's an air of, if you won't help, I'll make it happen myself. I'll find a way. I'll discover mm-hmm. a way. And that ingenuity and independence is definitely something that I've learned being in St. Louis. And it's something that I carry with me in L.A. Like, literally, the CEO of the company told me that I inspired an award called the Get Ish Done
okay.
Award.
GSD.
That is just naturally me. If there's something I can do to make sure a task is done, okay, let's get it done. Like, what are we waiting for? Let's make it happen. And, you know, that has 100% served me well.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever come back to St. Louis to work, Sheree?
Yes. I'm excited to come back to St. Louis to work. I would actually want to add to the film Black Girl Blue. So I'm mm-hmm. planning and, you know, securing funding to add to it, to come back and work with or film with the women who were originally in the film. And I've been talking to some other friends who are still here about projects. You know, St. Louis is an easy place to film as far as when it comes to permits, getting permissions, and, you know, the fees for all the things. It's a low-cost city to create and make in. And so I would love to come back here and work with other creatives to, you know, bring things life in this city where I was born and bred.
Mm-hmm. So this interest in film, you said it was sparked by your experience of using a family camcorder. There may be some, I hope there are some, who don't know what a camcorder is, because we're reaching young listeners. But shooting video today, obviously, is very different than it was when you were a kid, when I was a kid. And because we have these cameras, many of us in our pockets with our phones, that changes things too, right? Sheree, what message would you share with, you know, budding videographers out there?
I would say use the tools that you have at your disposal. If you have a smartphone, you have everything you need. Literally, the first film that I created, meaning I wrote, directed, and produced it, was shot on an iPhone 8 Plus.
Okay.
And that is all. I needed that. I needed an editing program. You can use iMovie. You can use whatever you can find. But you have everything at your disposal to create what it is that you want to bring to life. And don't let anyone, not even yourself, tell you otherwise. You can do it.
So, Cherie, as we wrap here, we will be showing the film that you were a part of, The Last Repair Shop, here in our space outside the public media commons. How will it feel to have people here in your hometown watching this piece that you were part of making?
It feels incredible. It's an honor. It feels like everything that I've wanted to bring home. It feels like a gift to bring it home. And I hope that people here in St. Louis who watch it and also have dreams of working in film or in entertainment see that it's possible. You know, some things are happening in Missouri, you know, like the tax incentive has come back to hopefully, you know, allow the industry to build and grow and sustain itself. So that's my hope and dream. And it feels nice to bring something back that says, okay, this is what we can do.
Cherie, thank you so much for joining us today and welcome back home.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.